And thank you for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad when you're here. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations, to really be here, 800-838-3760 is the number to call anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, the local number is 541-552-6782. Or you can send emails during the live broadcast. Those go to jx@jeffnet.org. Recycling is by no means a new concept. It came into regular use after the burst of environmental awareness that gave us Earth Day, the EPA, and bottle bills, all within a few years of 1970. But just because we all know the term and what it means does not mean we practice recycling. Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality, DEQ, is taking a look at recycling habits to see if some of those habits need to be reformed or perhaps formed in the first place. The focus is on the recycling of plastics. Peter Spendelow is a recycling specialist with the Oregon DEQ and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Peter, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Good to have you here. In general, how would you say Oregon is doing in recycling plastics?
Well, you know, you can look at it two ways. From one standpoint, you know, comparing us to the rest of the nation, we're probably doing pretty well. We're probably, on a per capita basis, one of the higher higher recovery rates for plastics. But looking at it from another standpoint, plastics is one of the largest materials in our waste stream. It's about 10% of the garbage by weight. But, you know, plastics are very light. If you look at it from the standpoint of important things like energy, you know, plastics is absolutely huge, the amount of energy that we dispose of each year, because plastics is basically pure petroleum.
So when people stop to think about that aspect of it, though, the conserving of energy, so, I mean, potentially is there energy to be released from recycling plastics?
Well, yeah, you can save a lot of energy by recycling plastics because you not only save the energy it takes to make the plastic in the first place, you know, to take the petroleum or the natural gas and reform it, make these molecules like, ethylene molecules, put them together and make polyethylene. You know, that takes a lot of energy, but then there's the energy in the, you know, the petroleum itself that you save. And when you dispose of that stuff, it just goes in the landfill. You just waste all that, which means, you know, if you want more plastics, you got to dig, you know, get more petroleum out of the ground.
For the folks who actually are doing their duty as they look at it and recycling plastics, so, I mean, the question has lingered there for a very long time now. It seems like several decades. When we recycle, is the stuff actually reused again in some form or recycled in some form? I mean, what happens? These things, do they end up in landfills or warehouses anyway, despite our efforts to recycle?
No, the plastics that you put out for recycling, most of it does get recycled. Now, there is some that's lost. So, for instance, you know, we recycle bottles. Well, there are labels on the bottles, and those might get washed off and disposed of. They're caps. And now, most places are actually recovering the caps now. But, you know, in the past, the caps used to be disposed of also. So and you can make good products out of them. You can make, for instance, the soft drink bottles that we, you know, when we consume soft drink, that plastic can actually go back to make new soft drink bottles, but it's more common to use that to make fibers that are used in textiles, for instance. It's a polyester, so you can, you know, use that to make T-shirts, or you can use it to make carpet backing or all sorts of other products from it.
I'm curious about the textile use. I mean, would people who are wearing the garments really know?
Whether they're recycled or not? No,
right.
You wouldn't. I mean, the recycled plastic is identical to the virgin plastic as far as you see it. And that's the whole, the nice thing about recycling is you want to be able to take the material back and substitute it for a virgin product, which means you don't have to have all that environmental damage that comes from, getting the resources to make that virgin product in the first place.
Peter Spendelow, it seems like there's always a fair amount of confusion about the different kinds of plastic out there. I know for a couple of years I was interested enough to flip every container over and look for the number in the little recycling triangle and try to figure out which kind of plastic it was. I don't remember why I dropped that, but I think it's because I still was never able to quite figure things out. So, I mean, just on a rough basis, I mean, how many different kinds of plastic are generally out there in consumer use?
Well, that I can't give you a number, but there are some plastics which are called the commodity plastics. They're out there in large amounts, and then there are a lot of other very specialized plastics that are out there in really small amounts. The specialized plastics are really hard to recycle because you just can't get enough of any one of them. And that's an important aspect of plastics recycling, by the way, is you just, you know, except for some sort of very crude products like plastic lumber, you can't really mix different types of plastics. They're very different from each other. Some of them are completely non-mixable. Other ones you can mix to certain degrees, but only for making crude products like plastic lumber. You wouldn't want to, for instance, mix a polypropylene and a low-density polyethylene together in making a bottle, because that bottle would be just very, well, it just wouldn't function well as a bottle.
So the recycling and the reuse are very, very different from plastic to plastic.
Right. Yeah, they really are. And some plastics, you know, we really don't have any recycling market for. You know, even in PET, the type of plastic which is used in soft drink bottles, there are some places where they're using it to make beer bottles. That, you know, use it. It's pretty much only in stadiums. Maybe it's just to keep people from throwing bottles out the ref and spraying the refs. But you know, that brown plastic, it's just there isn't that much of it, and so they really don't have much ability to use it, because you know it takes so long to store it up. Nobody wants to take that length of time to and use up their warehouse space to store the stuff. But the PET soft drink bottles, a highly recyclable material, and for that matter, the beverage distributors and one of the local plastics recyclers got together to put a plant here in Oregon that is processing that material and putting it back into a form that they can sell it, you know, out there competing against the virgin plastic, getting the same sort of high prices that the plastic pellets get.
Peter Spendalo is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's a recycling specialist with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and we're talking about plastics recycling in the state of Oregon. Pretty good rate compared to nationally, but DEQ looking at ways to perhaps boost that rate a little higher. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about recycling of plastics and other materials for that matter. 800-838-3760 around the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So PET, I mean, is it something fairly easy for someone like you to rattle off what that stands for?
Yeah, but it's polyethylene terephthalate, so it's easy to rattle off, but it probably doesn't tell people a whole lot.
All right, but it is mostly soft drink bottles, and so most of those would be covered by the nickel deposit law in Oregon, wouldn't they?
Right. It's also used for a lot of other things too. So, for instance, a lot of the deli trays now are made of PET. They used to be made of polystyrene, but you know, that's a different type of plastic. It's not recyclable with PET. But what we've seen, and this is a nice thing, is that some of the manufacturers are trying to move to use, you know, fewer types of plastics, so that their plastic is recyclable. Because you know, manufacturers want their material to be recyclable. Just for the public, you know, because recycling is a good thing as far as the public is concerned, so they don't want to put stuff in things that you just can't recycle. So there is a lot of different, you know, materials made out of PET. A lot of the trays used in, you know, like the frozen foods that you pop in your microwave are made of PET, for instance. Again, there are just a lot of different plastics, though, out there. And, you know, milk jugs are made of polyethylene. They're just, you know, that's another really big commodity plastic that we get a lot of material recovered from.
All right, you anticipated a question coming, which is there if there's been any effort to reduce the numbers of plastics out there, and it sounds like there is some voluntary campaign of some sort going on among the manufacturers. It's like if they can use their stuff again, it makes more sense for them to use fewer kinds. Let's take some calls here. We have Connie in Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Peter Spendalo from Oregon DEQ. We're talking about recycling plastics.
Good morning. Here in Lane County, I know at our facility, one of the private processors of plastic has said he has lost his market for certain plastics, and so they don't have an open sort of dump every kind of plastic recycling available at this point. In fact, they were saying that some of their other plastics they may not be able to take. So the comment was that there was a loss of markets in China, and for certain other plastics, not the water juice bottle ones. So if you could talk about how our plastic is being processed possibly outside of the country and how that affects our ability to recycle plastics here.
Good question. Where it goes once it leaves our hands. Thanks for that, Connie. Appreciate it. Peter?
Yeah, actually, that's a really good question. I want to take a little bit of time on that. The I mentioned before that we have a facility up here that recycles PET. But Oregon is not a plastic state. You know, we're a paper state. We have a lot of paper mills and, you know, a lot of timber industry. But we have very little in the way of plastics manufacturing. So most of the plastics that we recycle actually get recycled in some other state or in some other country. And a lot of plastics used to be shipped to China. because China has a very growing population, growing manufacturing, and of course they produce so many plastics goods that we use here. And in that sense, it actually makes sense that for them to get the plastic back so they can recycle back into products. The problem is, though, that I'll just say that we've been sending them, we as the United States and also Europe, has been sending China a lot of garbage in our plastics. Literally, I'm talking about garbage, things like diapers and so on. We're sending them loads that are just not very clean because we've been relying on the fact that they have cheap labor there so they can sort stuff out. So if we have loads that are contaminated and no recycler wants it here, you know, people think, well, it's really cheap to ship it to China because there's so many containers coming over from China with products that you can have a backhaul. You can send the plastic back there for very cheap on shipping, and then they have the cheap labor. Well, what that means is that China's getting our garbage. And the government of China said, listen, this is enough. We do not want to be the dumping ground for the rest of the world. We want to have, you know, clean material. So from now on, for the next 11 months, we are going to inspect every single load of plastic shipped to China. And if that load does not meet specifications, it has garbage in it or has non-recyclable plastics in it, we're going to reject that load. You're going to have to take it back to the United States and pay the shipping cost to ship it there. And so that's what's caused the problem with the a number of the rarer types of plastics, what we call the 3s through 7s. You know, those are the numbers on the bottom. So things like polystyrene, for instance, or polyvinyl chloride, things that we used to throw into these bales and ship to China. Well, when they're all mixed together and they're often contaminated with other materials, that's what China is now rejecting. They want to have clean plastics coming to them that they can recycle. They still need that clean plastic. The market itself hasn't disappeared. It's just that the market overall for the end use hasn't disappeared, but it's the fact that we don't have the processing capacity to clean the stuff up here to get it to China in nice, clean form. And that's why in Eugene, actually throughout the rest of the state, we've seen a drop back where they're not taking some of the dirtier plastics that they used to take. And that's one of the main things that our project is wanting to look at is how can we get the plastics into a good enough state that they are usable to make new products and we aren't shipping junk to other countries. You know, best even if we could, as much as possible, use that plastic right here in Oregon or in Northern California or Washington, you know, somewhere close by that we don't have to ship it across the ocean.
But Peter, would there be any back pressure on the consumer who is doing the initial recycling of the plastic? I mean, somebody like Connie, who just became aware from what you were telling us about what's happening to shipments of plastic to China, that wouldn't necessarily change the behavior of Connie or anybody else around her, would it? I mean, they wouldn't think, well, if this isn't really going to go to someplace else, then I'm just going to stop recycling it.
Well, I'm not sure what the effect would be on behavior, but the effect has been that literally there are types of plastics that you used to be able to recycle that you can't now. You know, in some cases, some of those plastics, you asked before whether the plastic gets recycled, and what I said was that, yes, generally most of it gets recycled. The stuff you want gets recycled. But if you've got some of those rarer types of plastics in there, those probably will get disposed because or types of plastics which literally are not recyclable, such as there are certain types of plastics that won't melt, you know, cross-linked polyethylene is an example.
Mm-hmm.
And so those, yes, they do get disposed, because you just can't tell the public, you know, how to identify cross-linked polyethylene. It's virtually impossible to tell that unless you actually try to take it and melt it and see that it doesn't melt. So you know, yes, there are some changes in what people can recycle. I'm hoping that people will continue to recycle those materials for which there are, you know, good markets. And again, this project we have in doing a plastics recovery assessment is to try and figure out what other plastics we could be recovering that do have good markets. You know, because when you look at what we recycle at the moment, it's almost all packaging. And yet most of the plastics ending up in the landfill are products. You know, they're things that are made of plastics that we use. And yes, there's a huge variety of those, much more so than packaging. But there are some commodities in there that be potentially recyclable, like polypropylene is an example. There's a lot of materials made out of polypropylene. For instance, plastic garbage cans, for instance, might be made out of polypropylene, or a lot of plastic buckets, or a lot of the plastics that's used to package food in grocery stores, nice, very clean material. So anyway, there is other material that we could be recovering, and it's not being recovered because nobody's told to separate it out at this point, because it's probably hard to figure out how to instruct people. And that's what we want to try and look at, figure out what ways, you know, can recover some of that other types of plastic.
All right, we're talking about the Plastics Recovery Assessment Project here in the Jefferson Exchange with Peter Spendelow, a recycling specialist with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. We'll take a few more minutes with him, and you can join us at the Exchange at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area, 541-552-6782 in the Rogue Valley, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Peter in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Peter Spendelow.
Hi. I was wondering if you can comment on why clamshells are so difficult to recycle. I throw a huge amount of them away at my work. And also, as I've put to other guests who have been on this show in the past, is whether or not you have an idea in your background about whether or not plastics, as they degrade, are better to use them at the beginning of their cycle versus the end, because you're not getting those degraded whatever compounds in you, versus the other way around, where you want to get those compounds out of it and then use it more towards once that stuff has gotten out of it. And maybe another sort of example or question would be like saran wrap, what your opinion is on whether or not that stuff leaches into food when it's stretched over it. I'll listen on the air.
All right. Thanks for the call, Peter. Appreciate that. And so plastic clamshells, we're talking about generally to-go containers that open like clamshells.
Yeah. The some of those are actually potentially very recyclable. There are two problems with it, though. One is that they're very thin. And so when you have a thin material, there's not much material there. And if that clamshell is used for something like holding a salad or some other material like that, you know, often people are not very careful at washing out their containers. And so you've got food contamination, and there are other sorts of, you know, oily materials in there that make it so that when somebody collects a lot of that, they have a whole, you know, there's not that much plastic in it relative to the other materials. I mean, there is a lot of plastic, but it's, you know, there's a high amount of contamination. And that contamination causes them a lot of cost to clean that out. So, and again, the problem also is that there are many types of clamshells. So you have the one type of clamshell is the the foam polystyrene, the stuff we call styrofoam. Then you have PET clamshells, which is the same plastic used to make plastic soft drink bottles. And then you have polyvinyl chloride clamshells. Luckily, those ones have almost disappeared at this point. But that's, you know, they look a whole lot like PET, and so most people probably wouldn't be able to tell them apart unless they're looking for a number that might be on there. And even there, how many people know the difference? You know, they know what the polyvinyl chloride is number 3 and PET is number 1. And, you know, most people, you don't have degrees in plastics when you come out of high school. Not common knowledge as to how recyclable each one of these things is. So that's the difficulty recycling plastic clamshells. It is one of the items that we really want to look at as a possibility to increase recovery, because I believe that our PET recycling facility up in St. Helens here in Oregon can take that PET and can use it if they can get just the PET clamshells. On the other question on the degrading, what I think we're talking about is whether the plastic itself has, you know, compounds in it that as the plastic gets older, they could leach out. So, for instance, you know, I reuse a bottle, you know, time after time to take, you know, drinks it with me to work. We'll wash out these bottles and fill them with orange juice, for instance, and take it with me to work. And the question is that going to be a problem? Is there stuff in that bottle that is going to leach out? And the answer is yes and no. There is stuff in the bottle that will leach out. It will probably leach out more as the bottle gets a little older and gets scratches and so on. And especially if you heat the thing, it will leach out more. But the quantities it leaches out are very, very small. And so I really hope that people won't stop reusing materials for that, just from the standpoint of I don't think it's a huge amount of I don't think it's much in terms of your exposure to these chemicals compared to other exposure you have to these same sorts of chemicals. So I personally, I do reuse containers myself. You know, I wouldn't want to heat something in a bottle like a PET bottle, partly because PET melts at a fairly low temperature, and you deform the bottle if you heat it too much. But I certainly hope people will continue to reuse plastic where it's feasible.
So what happens now with the Plastics Recovery Assessment Project? What's the next step?
We're getting a contractor to work with us to help us, and we're going to be working together with a really good advisory group that has a lot of experts around the country to look at things like how much of different types of plastics are out there. What is the equipment that you have to sort the different types of plastics? So, you know, there's something called optical sorting. You can pass plastics on a belt, you know, moving down a line, and it shines these lights on them, and based on what reflects back or what passes through the plastic, they can figure out, is this PET, is it polyvinyl chloride, is it polyethylene? And then they use a little air blast to blast the different types of plastic out of the stream into a different container. So, you know, how we just want to find out how good are those? Can they really, you know, can they be used to separate out different types of plastics that we aren't recycling at the moment? And then we want to look at what's the feasibility of collecting these things. You know, is curbside collection the best way to go? Do we want to look at, you know, doing special collections, say, grocery stores that get the type of plastics that they do, or you know, other types of generators that generate large amounts of plastics? So that's what we're trying to do, is figure out what we can recover and try to figure out, you know, what changes we can make in our collection programs to get a lot more plastics, because it really is a very high-valued, high-energy product that we're throwing away close to 80% of it at this time.
Well, you certainly gave us an aha moment pointing out that a lot of what ends up in landfills is products and not packaging, and that's where we can really make some gains in plastics recycling. We'll have to check with you further down the road as we go through the Plastics Recovery Assessment Project in Oregon. Peter Spendelow at the Department of Environmental Quality, thank you for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, thank you.
It's the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 24th of September, 2013. It's the anniversary of the establishment of the Post Office, the official establishment. Congress passed an act on this day in 1789, though there were already 75 post offices in existence around the country. It's the birthday of the man who said the test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. Francis Scott Fitzgerald, F. Scott Fitzgerald, born in St. Paul, 1896. He went to Princeton, an aunt paid his way there, tried out for the football team, was cut from the team. He was kicked out of Princeton, he went into the army. He went to officer training camp in Alabama, made a girlfriend there, Zelda Sayre. He wanted to go off to war, but the war ended before he could get into it. He and Zelda were engaged. She called off the engagement because he didn't have enough money. So he went back to St. Paul, and he wrote a novel, This Side of Paradise, which was a big success. Fitzgerald's daughter, Scotty, said about Scott and Zelda, "People who live entirely by the fertility of their imaginations are fascinating, brilliant, and often charming, but they should be sat next to at dinner parties, not lived with." And it's the birthday of Blind Lemon Jefferson, born on a farm in Couchman, Texas, around 1893, picked up the guitar as a teenager, played on the streets, getting change in a tin cup. Made his way to Dallas, then made his way to Chicago, recorded for Paramount Records. He recorded nearly 100 songs over 3 years. He became the first country blues musician with a national following. He was only about 36 years old when he died in Chicago, his body found on a street in a December snowstorm, buried back in Wortham, Texas, in a grave with a granite marker engraved with his own lyrics, "Lord, it's one kind favor I'll ask of you. See that my grave is kept clean." Here's a poem for today by Ivan Boland. the necessity for irony. On Sundays, when the rain held off, after lunch or later, I would go with my 12-year-old daughter into town and put down the time at junk sales, antique fairs. There I would lean over tables absorbed by lace, wooden frames, glass. My daughter stood at the other end of the room, her flame-colored hair, obvious whenever, which was not often, I turned around. I turned around, she was gone, grown, no longer ready to come with me whenever a dry Sunday held out its promises of small histories, endings. When I was young, I studied styles, their use and origin, which age was known for which ornament, and was always drawn to a lyric speech, a civil tone, but never thought I would have the need, as I do now, for a darker one. Spirit of irony, my caustic author of the past, of memory, and of its pain which returns, hurts, stings. Reproach me now, remind me that I was in those rooms with my child, with my back turned to her, searching, oh irony, for beautiful things. A poem by Yvonne Boland, The Necessity for Irony, from her collection The Lost Land, published by W.W. Norton & Company and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by LendingTree, where you can fill out one form and receive up to 5 loan offers at trylendingtree.com, NMLS 1136. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.